Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Movie Geeks United celebration of the summer of 1985 at the movies. Tonight, actress Dana Wheeler-Nicholson from the smash comedy classic Fletch. We're really excited to have you here because Fletch is obviously a movie that's beloved by so many people, including us, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. But, yeah.
Give me a sense first of the period of time leading up to Fletch in your career in When did you decide that acting was something that you wanted to pursue, first of all?
Well, it was fairly late considering how young people start all that. I was always in art school, and I was actually in Parsons School of Design. I'm from New York City and was enrolled in Parsons and in my second year. And during that one summer, I took an acting class at HB Studios, which is a well-known acting studio in the Village. And loved it and switched over schools. I transferred to Sarah Lawrence College and went into theater there and didn't finish before I got hired by Hollywood, which was very exciting at the time. I got flown out. The first thing I got flown out for was called Princess Daisy, which I got down to the wire on, and then got agents and, you know, I very quickly got a movie that George Roy Hill directed called Little Drummer Girl, and then got a small part in Mrs. Sofol that Julian Armstrong directed. And
you were following around Diane Keaton for a little while.
I was stalking her a bit, like in a small way, just a little stalk, small stalk.
Right, right.
And then I had to break off and told her I had to work with other people, so, you know. So that was, you know, hard on her. And her career suffered, I'm sure. And then I got offered a movie that John Landis was going to direct called Into the Night with Jeff Goldblum, and I ended up having to turn it down because of scheduling with Mrs. Sofol, and then he sort of let the Fletch people know that he loved me and that he thought they should hire me, and I had a meeting with all those folks, and I had the job before I got home to my hotel. So,
oh, my gosh.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, it all happened pretty fast, I must say. It was a very, very fast trajectory from college to that. Sorry?
I'm just curious. I'm sorry. I'm curious. What part for Into the Night were you on?
The lead, Michelle Pfeiffer's part.
That's wow.
Wow, wow.
Yeah. That was offered to me and couldn't do it, and then Landis was sort of like, well, who the hell am I going to get? And I was like, this is actress I think is great. Her name is Michelle Pfeiffer. Have you heard of her? Like that. So anyway,
it was very nice of him to offer you up for Fletch too, but to go out of his way to do that.
He was. I loved him. I was very sad not to be able to do that movie because he was. He's just. He's a madman in a great way, you know. He's just so highly talented and so intelligent and so funny, and I was so thrilled. And just, I had a commitment to Mrs. Sofol, which kept getting pushed because of lack of snow for the first time in Toronto's history or something like that. So it just bumped into it badly, and I had to make a choice. Oh.
Yeah. So tell me about this meeting that you had for Fletch. You went in there. Michael Ritchie's there. Who else is in the room with you?
It was Alan Greisman and Mr. Ritchie and Chevy. And it was a big deal. And I just had a ball in there. And I think I got the job because I made Chevy laugh a couple times. I mean, we just had this very, very natural back and forth immediately. And I was very young and very naive. And so I just thought this was what happened every day. You know, there was nothing about it that felt precious or scary, or I was just like, oh, that's great. I love Chevy Chase. Sure, I'll meet him. You know, it was all very la-di-da for me at the time, you know. So I just had a lot of fun in that room and really connected with all of them. And I don't know. It went very fast. We laughed a lot, and I got in my rental car. They'd flown me out to L.A. for an Into the Night thing, and this segued into that, and got in my rental car, headed back to the weird hotel in the valley, which I didn't even know where that was, and, you know, got a message when I got back to my hotel room or something. So
what was your first impression of Chevy Chase, and how did that impression deepen as you worked with him?
Well, like I say, we connected pretty quickly. I mean, I think right off the bat, there was a definite chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought he was just big and handsome and hilarious, and those are my favorite kind of men. So, you know, with a dark side, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I'm an easy laugh, and so is he, it turns out. And I guess I had heard, at that time, he was sort of at the height of everything, and I had heard sort of that he was difficult and all the rumors of things, which I won't go into because there's no point. It's ancient history.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had been fairly warned, and I found all of that to be just not my experience. He was just couldn't have been more gentlemanly and loving and generous and protected me. It was my first big thing, and he just walked me through everything, and I have nothing but adoration for him. Absolute adoration for him. We had so much fun. Really.
Well,
this
character was so kind of tailor made for him because it's such a fast and loose kind of character. Was there improvisation that you guys did in scenes at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I would have to say that most of the lines that get quoted back to me after all these years by people who love the movie are pretty much all lines that Chevy made up on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really how he worked. It was really like you didn't know what was going to happen, and that to me was just hilarity and so fun, and it was so hard to keep a straight face. And he just would, yes, absolutely, that's where he's from, is improv, and you know, we always knew what the scene had to do. It was never like it wasn't going to happen, the scene. It was just what he was going to come up with in the moment. The water buffalo line was absolutely not scripted, and that's the one that is one of the most. And he changed it, you know, he changed it up. It wasn't like that was the only thing he said. That was just the take they used. If I recall, you know, correctly, there were a lot of different versions of that entrance.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he landed on that one, he stuck with it, you know, but
right.
It was a couple of running starts at it, and then that happened, and then that was good, and, you know, someone like him knows when it's good.
I got to tell you, when we announced that you were going to be on the show, a lot of the responses that we got quoted that exact line.
Yes.
So it survived.
Yes.
Well, that's Chevy. That's pure Chevy Chase.
I always found what was great is because the books were not that they're based on aren't, you know, you wouldn't think Chevy Chase firsthand. I think what he did with the character and changed it around and made it for him is incredible.
Yes.
I mean, that's what's
yes.
so outstanding is what he did with, because people at first, when that movie came out, like people, friends, parents who read the books were like, why is he playing him? And then they went to go see it and they're like, wow, that's not like the book, but that's incredible.
Well, I think the thing that appealed to him was that they, first of all, let him do that and obviously tailor it to his improv skills and his characterization skills. And plus there was the mystery sort of element, which was fun. And for Chevy, I think that movie and Foul Play, you know, he gets to do some acting. And he did other than that after, but he, you know, I think he really liked that there were dramatic scenes in that movie and mm-hmm. things that he had to sell, and, you know, he had to get angry, and he had to be jealous, and he had to be, you know, pissed off and things, you know, real life things, as well as the mix of all the character stuff that he was doing.
Yeah.
So I think he loved doing it, you know, I really do.
Well, for another person that I have to ask you about in connection with this movie is Michael Ritchie, because it's such a career of great films, and I don't think he's spoken about it enough. So what can you tell us about him, that experience?
Well, he, unfortunately, he's passed away. Very sadly. This is one of the loveliest people I've ever met. He was, I think it was his first kind of thing, this kind of big comedy. I think he had, I don't know that he had done something in this vein before, though he had done great movies, obviously, before and after.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was always in a position with Chevy, from my very naive observation at the time. You know, what Chevy wanted was what happened. It was very much, you know, I think that at the time he really called the shots. And mm-hmm. Michael walked that line of you know, being good to his star and leading man with a lot of money on the table from the studios, Universal, and getting a movie made that he wanted to make. You know, he was a gentleman. He was very, very sweet. I think Chevy liked him very much. I think there were times that Chevy kind of overrode his directorial ideas out of maybe knowing comedy better or thinking he knew comedy better or something. Mm-hmm. And there may have been some little bit of tension there. But I think from my observation at the time, it was a very healthy collaboration, ultimately,
When you were working on it, could you feel that it was working, or is that always a question mark when you're doing a movie, you just don't know for sure?
Oh, at the time, I didn't know anything. Like I say, I didn't know anything, and I was not really paying attention. I mean, I've been asked that question before, you know, did you know that you were making this classic, you know, cult thing? And I say, absolutely not. I was, you know, thinking about, you know, what cute boy I was going to go on my date with later and, you know, whatever stupid thing a 22-year-old girl is thinking about. You know, I was having so much fun. I wasn't, no, there was, I was just doing my job and it was all new and exciting and I didn't have any sense of anything past the absolute moment. At that time.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. It was just a lot of fun.
When did you realize that this movie had such lasting kind of prominence among movie fans?
Like 10 years after it came out and people were still stopping me on the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, 10 years later, I was like, wow, this thing really just keeps on giving. I really thought, you know, a couple years after wasn't unusual. 5 years later, it was like, huh, that's sweet. 10 years later, you know, and then 15, 20 years later, or whatever, it's been almost 30. I don't know how long it's been.
25 years.
I mean, he comes from a time period of great films, and he made a lot of great films, and also, like you said, Foul Play, and it seems like Old Times, and Deal of the Century, and obviously the Vacation movies, but
yes.
This guy's an icon of 70s and 80s movies and television. There's no way to ever deny that.
No, absolutely. And honestly, I get stopped and asked about this movie to this day. If I go anywhere, and I'm not even kidding, I live in Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anywhere I go, mm-hmm. if I go out, somebody mentions it. Somebody. And it's wild. I mean, wild.
Well,
it was about
there,
10 years after that I was like, wow, okay, what was that?
Well, there, it seems like a movie that's, I know that there were plans to kind of remount Fletch as a series of films. I think Kevin Smith had some plans
a couple
years back.
That's right.
Take it back
to
the book
right.
Stack, so we go back to the source.
Were you ever approached about any plans like that?
No, I wasn't. I don't think it ever got far enough, you know, where...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know they started casting around and things for the Fletch guy. That's right, Jason Lee. I remember
hearing
that.
Yeah, he was. That's who they were like,
But no one ever came to me about that. You know, I never think in those terms. You know, if someone did, it would be lovely and a nice surprise, but no. I don't think it ever got that far.
You're very fortunate because you have, you've done some terrific work, and you have another film on your resume that, like Fletch, I'm sure that people still approach you about. I know people that watch this movie 4 or 5 times a year, and that's Tombstone.
Yes, another one that, again, I go wherever I go, especially now that I'm in more Western, you know.
Right.
And my husband is from Montana, so that's a big, whenever we're there.
Right.
Similarly, to this day, yesterday, someone brought up Tombstone. Same thing. Same kind
that's
of lasting.
Awesome.
I think so. I think it's wonderful.
Tell me what that experience was like. That had to have been a fun set, like a very testosterone-filled set.
Yeah,
that's the word for it, and so it's fun. I'm still recovering from all the fun I had on that movie, I'll tell you that. That one was more fun than one person should be allowed to have. And, yes, when I walked into the table read, there were, I think, 22 principal actors, 18 of them were men, and the kind of men that, you know, you think about that group, it was a madhouse. It was so much fun. But it was also, you know, you had Val and some really serious, Stephen Lang and Val and some serious guys there. And
Powers
and
Booth.
Powers
had,
and, you know, these are first-class actors. And Kurt, you know. And so it was very, a very hard-working group.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of drama because we lost Kevin Jarre, who was originally directing as well as had written a screenplay. There was a big turn, upset about that, and a stall, and people were recast at the last minute, and you know, sort of. And then George Cosmatos was brought in, and then Kurt and Val had to really take over a lot of the creative stuff. Chris Cosmatos had his talents, but they weren't really sort of, you know, storytelling talents. They were more action sort of. So Kurt and Val had to ground.
Very true.
Yeah, Kurt and Val sort of had to ground the thing as best they could with what Kevin was trying to do. And so it was a lot of drama, but it was fantastic. It was like getting taken to school every day watching these guys work. It really was. It was the first thing I've ever been on where on your day off you would go and watch other people work and stand behind the camera. Just because everybody was so good, and you know,
it strikes me too, because maybe I'm mistaken about this, but I don't think it was as appreciated upon release as it has become in subsequent years. Like it's almost gained favor over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it did well at the time. I mean,
it did very well.
Money.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it didn't get great. I mean, I remember the New York Times gave it a nice review, which my mother sent me, and I have somewhere in some rotten file somewhere. But I think, you know, people were okay about it, you know, in general. So it kind of went away. But, yeah, it's had its life mostly after.
It's the better of the two.
I agree.
I mean, there are obviously a lot of movies about that period, but compared to the one that came out, I think it was the following summer, Wyatt Earp, the Lawrence Kasdan one. And that's, you know, I mean, there's a lesson. That's a lesson to be learned in filmmaking right there. When you make a biopic, you want to pick the part of the life that's interesting, not from the date of birth, the date of death.
My advice to anyone making any movie. Don't make it boring.
Right.
I appreciate you saying that.
I mean... News-a-rama. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, it's a movie, people.
Yeah.
And Tombstone, if it's anything, it's fun. I mean,
it's
a fun movie to watch.
It's really fun. And, you know, honestly, Kevin wrote something a lot more ambitious in terms of it being more of I think his vision was really almost a Godfather type thing where you get these brothers and their families and their relationships, and it was very much about the relationships.
Mm-hmm.
It was very little about the Acton originally.
Mm-hmm.
So it really morphed into something else once Kevin was not directing and they had to make it, take the adjustment with George directing and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It turned into what it is now. So.
Yeah. Well, I can't let you go without asking you about what you're working on now. Are you still working on Friday Night Lights? Is that an ongoing?
Yeah. Yes, it is ongoing. We're in our fifth season, which is the last season as far as we know, so it's sad, but, you know, sweetly sad.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a good run, and it's kept me, you know, busy around here. And so, yeah, that'll be over soon. I'm about to do a movie here. I do, you know, things here and there in between the show. I'm doing a little movie called Dadgum Texas with Jeff Fahey this week. Doing a movie this summer in Montana, probably doing a Western in the fall, also shooting here with, well, I can't really talk about it, but
okay.
I'll talk about it to you when it's signed, sealed, delivered, but, you know, so there's all kinds of stuff that happens around here, and then, you know, yeah, I'm always doing something.
And five-time champion, is that an upcoming...
Yeah, that's in the final edit. That was also a little movie that was shot here. It's beautiful, beautiful little script. It's me and John Grice and Betty Buckley. And it was shot here in Smithville and for $2.50. A wonderful writer named Bernd Mader wrote it and directed it. So it's, you know, it's a first-time deal. So he's final edit now. We'll see what happens. It's beautiful. Beautiful.
So Dance with the One, we were talking about that earlier before we got started here.
Mm-hmm.
Is that up for distribution? Is there any, what's
yes,
the future of that project?
Yeah, they're looking for a home for it, absolutely. It's in festivals, and they're making deals with distributors and things to see where it'll end up. Yes, they very much want to put it somewhere, especially with the idea that this program out of UT is... such an incredible creative process with an incredibly, I mean, the model works. They made the movie. The movie's good. And I think they're just really determined that that stays in place and that it really finds some way to, I don't know, land somewhere and be seen and
right.
recognized.
Yeah. Well,
there's
a lot of great avenues now for independent films that didn't exist so many years ago, so
yes,
so hopefully it can get seen.
I think it will. My husband is on a huge learning curve where that's concerned. He's actually a writer director, and he stepped into a producerial role on this because that's his position at the university for this program.
Mm-hmm.
But so he's on a huge learning curve with this, and yeah, he's been getting a lot of help and feedback about where to point it, and I'm very, very positive about it. And it's a wonderful movie. It's really, really lovely. It's great. Love it.
Well, I wish you the very best of luck with that film and all your other future endeavors. And come back to us
please come back
on a future project.
Yeah.
I would love to. Just let me know. I'm here in Austin, and just give me a shout and would love to chat. I'm so
Thank
glad
you, so
you guys
much.
You know, keep Fletch in your in your hearts. I certainly do. It's
We love it. We love it.
Well, that whole time period, we love.
Yeah,
thank
I don't remember it very well, unfortunately, but it was fun time. I do remember that.
That's good. That shows you how good times they were.
The 80s are kind of a blur to you, or
yes, kind of big chunks that don't really come back quickly, but you know, it was fun.
That's cool.
Well, thank you so much, Dana. I appreciate it. I hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you, Dana.
Very much. Thank you.
That is Dana Wheeler Nicholson, who starred with Chevy Chase in the film Fletch, which hit theaters during the summer of 1985. Look for Dana in her new film Dance with the One and in the highly acclaimed television series Friday Night Lights. That's it for tonight, but you can tune in for more great content from the summer of 1985 series every weeknight, this week and next. And we'll be featuring lengthy interviews with talents like actor Steve Guttenberg from Cocoon, director Joel Schumacher from St. Elmo's Fire, director Joe Dante for Explorers, actress Alexandra Paul for American Flyers, director Savage Steve Holland for Better Off Dead, and on and on and on. And it all culminates into a special two-hour show on Wednesday, June 16th, which will feature talents from the big hit that summer, Back to the Future, and a critical roundtable overview of that entire movie season. So thanks so much for joining us, and we will see you next time.